podcasts of the WDWNT Network are made possible each and every week by listeners like you and the following fantastic sponsors. Magical Travel is an authorized Disney vacation planner and is always ready to assist you in making your next trip to the Walt Disney World Resort, Disneyland Resort, or aboard the Disney Cruise Line even more magical. If you book a trip to the Walt Disney World Resort between August 16th and October 3rd, 2009, you can get a free quick service meal, table service meal, and snack for everyone in your party for every day of your vacation. For more information on this special offer and many, many more, visit MagicalTravel.com and book your next Disney trip today.
I'm not sponging for rum. It be gold I'm after.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay.
There's no turning back now.
Like a grand and miraculous spaceship, our planet has sailed through the universe of time.
Put up 2, 5, and 7.
Gorgeous, yeah!
Look at the guy in the goofy mask.
That's not a mask.
Sorry, lady.
I'm sure to do better next time. It was my first flight, and I'm still getting used to my programming.
You made it! I knew you would.
Hi, hello, and welcome. Welcome to our show.
Welcome to the WDW News Today podcast, a variety show celebrating the Walt Disney World Resort and its fans. At this time, please welcome your party host, Tom Corliss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another celebration of the WDWNT podcast. This is a very, very late episode number 96 for June 3rd, 2009. To kick off this week's show, we have another great Walt Disney World-based discussion that you voted for. And in this week's opinionated roundtable, we will be discussing Disney animated and live-action films that we think should have attractions somewhere within the resort's 4 theme parks. Following that, we have an interview I conducted with a very good friend of the show, Mr. Adam Goodger, to find out what he's up to on the Disney Brit podcast, and as well, to see if we can convince you to cross the pond for a very special event coming this December. To wrap up the show, we will once again open up our WDWNT mailbox to respond to your many emails and voicemails in our continuing effort to bring more interaction between you and this program. So what are you waiting for? Let's celebrate another week of Walt Disney World information and fun on the WDW News Today podcast.
With episode 100 of the WDW News Today podcast just on the horizon, we wanted to take this time to tell you how you could be part of that historic episode. We're inviting you to send in any 100th episode related message that you would like to hear played on the show by calling our voicemail at 206-666-2982. If you want your voicemail to make it into episode 100, we must receive the message by 11:59 p.m. Eastern on June 21st, 2009. As always, we're inviting you to be part of the WDW News Today podcast. So please, don't miss out on this opportunity. And don't forget to tune into episode 100 of the WDW News Today podcast on June 28th, 2009. We now return you to your regularly scheduled podcast. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's WDW News Today Roundtable discussion that you voted for.
It's now once again time for a roundtable discussion that you voted for, and this time you've picked a very interesting topic. It's Disney movies that should have attractions at Walt Disney World. So I'm sure many of our panelists have opinions, so let's introduce them. First of all, Mr. Anthony Iacullo.
Hello.
The host of the Disneyland News Today podcast, Mr. Luke Manning.
Hey there.
The mayor, Justin Heyman.
How's it going?
Kyle Duffield from Canada.
Hey, everybody.
And the Transformer himself, Scott Smith.
That's right.
As we count down to Revenge of the Fallen, we will continue
June 24th, everyone.
Make fun of Scott's Transformer obsession. All right, so without any further ado, basically we asked our panelists to pick just five, because I know there's plenty of Disney movies out there, both animated and live action, that they could have chosen from. So what we're going to do is they're all going to say the five movies they think should have attractions at Walt Disney World. So we'll begin with Anthony. Anthony, what are your five films?
Well, my first movie would be Fantasia. I kind of thought of that as a sort of Fantasia dark ride, taking you through each one of the scenes, kind of in the style of Peter Pan or Winnie the Pooh attraction. My next one was Tron.
Wow.
They had originally planned a Tron arcade. And I don't know, it might seem a little hokey to some people, but kind of in the vein of Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger spin, kind of a Discs of Tron kind of laser game.
Yeah, so as we all know, there's a good chance that a Tron attraction happening, seeing as the film series is making a comeback next year.
Yeah, well, even a light cycle ride would work really well.
That'd be awesome.
Don't forget they used footage from Tron in both the World of Motion and the People Mover at Disneyland for the speed tunnels, which I think both worked very well, the footage paired with the speed tunnel technology.
The next would actually be a Bolt 3D ride using a more updated version of the Star Tours / Body Wars kind of vehicles, where you just kind of go along with scenes from the movie and get the whole interaction like in Star Tours, like when Bolt jumps out a window or something, the vehicle goes down and everything. Odd choice of sorts for me, but the Jungle Book cruise with Baloo and Mowgli.
Wait, I want to talk about Bolt. Why are you jumping ahead? I want to talk about this Bolt idea, because I think a lot of people here will say in their opinions that Bolt was a fantastic movie, maybe quite overlooked last year. And I think if you look back at that big action sequence from the Bolt film in the early minutes of the film, that would make some spectacular action for, you know, a motion-based simulator or something like that.
Even the rescue scene at the end would make for a great sort of experience using that technology. As the things start falling in the on the set, vehicle gets jolted and could have it get warm in the vehicle, like in Test Track. And
And you could put it at the studios, because the Bolt film is based on a television show and production at a real working studio, and it fit quite well at the Hollywood studios.
I'll definitely use one of the remaining empty lots, and you can easily turn it into something for the Bolt attraction.
And now we could get to Jungle Book.
Okay, the Jungle Book Cruise with...
Jungle Book Cruise.
With Baloo and Mowgli. Basically in the vein of the Jungle Cruise, but going through different parts of the Jungle Book with Baloo and Mowgli.
I think that would work well maybe as an overlay of the Jungle Cruise, but be a bit similar to the Jungle Cruise if it was a separate attraction.
Beware of anti-aircraft dancing bears. Yeah, I think you know, a Jungle Cruise layover, while I'm sure many listeners are probably screaming at their iPods right now at the idea of a layover, Jungle Book definitely an underappreciated movie, I think we'll all agree on that. I wouldn't be surprised if someone else here has that on their list as well.
Trust me, I would not want to replace or even overlay the Jungle Cruise. I love the Jungle Cruise. I love
Calm down, Anthony. They can't get to you through the iPod. They can't get to you, I promise.
The weird thing about that is it did have a brief attraction that nobody seems to have ever cared about. So I wonder if it would help or hurt, you know?
Is that a brief attraction or was that a really strange show at Animal Kingdom?
I was trying to be nice.
Well, because we did a Back to the Future on the Theater in the Wild, and we talked about the, what was it, Journey into Jungle Book show?
Journey into the Jungle Book, yeah.
And, going to Animal Kingdom the month it opened and seeing that, you know, maybe not the most traditional Jungle Book experience for a truly classic Disney film, and being the last one that Walt actually worked on as well. I think a more traditional ride-through attraction is definitely good for Jungle Book, especially with the very lush settings and action sequences of that film, and the dance scenes as well would work well in maybe a dark ride format.
I was just going to say, you could do the cruise as a dark ride format even with the characters.
Maybe through show buildings, that would be a good idea.
And last but not least is the Narnia stunt show.
Which, unfortunately, I don't think can happen now because Narnia pretty much is in Fox's hands now.
Yep.
Well, they could do it based on Prince Caspian or just what they...
I hate to shatter your dreams, Anthony, but I don't know what the likelihood is of Disney going back to a franchise that now another company has to use.
Boo.
But it was a good series, and definitely... If Disney kept up with it, I think we could have easily seen a great attraction.
There's a reason they dumped it.
Too expensive, sure. A series, and it didn't revenue the kind of... It didn't bring in the kind of revenue they expected.
Okay, if it had stuck around and if they still had the rights and everything, hypothetically, of course, a Narnia stunt show would have been a good replacement or an update for the indie stunt show.
And then we could have got the Indiana Jones Adventure. An excellent list, Anthony. Let's move on to young Luke Manning.
Thank you, very old Tom Corliss.
So how many princess movies you have here?
There is one on there. First, I'm going to get to an attraction which I believe was rumored to happen right back at the opening of the Walt Disney World Resort, and that is Mary Poppins. I think there's some really great imagery in this movie. I mean, the steps in time sequence, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious especially, and Chim Chim Cheree even, just a lot of great stuff that I think could translate over into a great musical dark ride.
And we have actually seen what could be considered a dark ride scene in the Great Movie Ride at the studios.
Yeah.
It works quite well.
Yeah, so that's just an example of how good it could be.
You're not going to get any complaints on Mary Poppins. It's one time we're not going to come down on Luke.
Well, I don't think you're going to get any complaints on the next one, which is Wall-E.
There goes everyone's list.
Yeah,
Wall-E was an absolutely spectacular movie. And I have not seen Up yet, but as of recording this, Wall-E is my favorite Pixar movie. The animation in that movie was just absolutely stunning. And I think that now that there's Toy Story Mania over at the studios, that the need for Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin isn't as great. So maybe a Wall-E retheme to that might work. I don't know. But some kind of Wall-E attraction I think would work very well, especially in Tomorrowland.
And how about a Wall-E rethemed to Tomorrowland? I mean, the by and large corporation certainly could have a nice role in the overall storyline of Tomorrowland. And I think we've discussed this idea on the show before in the past as well. So yeah. A lot of WALL-E ideas. And still, it may just be a case that WALL-E is such a young film that there might still be something cooking at Walt Disney Imagineering as we speak.
Now, the next film I'm going to talk about is Beauty and the Beast. And Beauty and the Beast, much like The Little Mermaid, I think those are two movies that once they just came out were begging to have attractions. And The Little Mermaid is finally getting its own full-blown attraction over at Disney's California Adventure. Construction actually just started this week. But I think Beauty and the Beast, just as well as that, would translate very well over into the sort of live ride through attraction, especially with the dining scene and even the ballroom scene. Just a lot of great stuff in that movie that I think would work very well as a dark ride.
Yep, and that is indeed rumored for Fantasyland. So we'll see if that comes out.
Yeah, hopefully that does happen, because I think next to The Little Mermaid, that's the one I want the most. And of course, we are getting The Little Mermaid, so that's great. The next one I have is one that was also rumored. I believe this was rumored for California Adventure, and that is Ratatouille. And specifically, a kind of Ratatouille coaster similar to the Crush's coaster over at Disneyland Paris. I think this would work very well, sort of like the chase through the kitchen sequence. So you have Remy sort of as your... Maybe you're in like a kitchen pot or something, and Remy's on the edge of it, and you're trying to dodge through the restaurant and try to get the customer served and everything like that.
And at the end of the ride, guests are boiled and served at the Food and Wine Festival.
Certainly. Again, Ratatouille, another great Pixar movie that I think would translate over very well. Now, the final one I'm going to mention is one that may get some weird looks from people.
Luke Manning the ride.
No. And this is one of the lesser known Disney movies, but it's actually one of my personal favorite. And I'm going to say The Great Mouse Detective.
Wow. Interesting choice.
He has a love for the rodents, he does.
Well, maybe it's just the British stuff.
But The Great Mouse Detective, especially the sequence right at the end of the movie with Basil facing against...
Radigan,
yeah.
Vincent Price.
Yes, Vincent Price did a fantastic job. Radigan may not be the best known, but he's one of my favorite Disney villains. Always used to creep me out. And I think that, especially that end sequence with the big fight on Big Ben... would work really well, and I doubt this would ever happen because it's really just not a well-known enough movie or popular enough. But you know, I think that would be one that would work really well.
Sort of at the end of that down period.
Yeah, I mean, I think once you got to The Great Mouse Detective, because I believe before that you had Black Cauldron and Fox and the Hound, which, to be honest, really weren't that good, but. Once
Fox
you got...
and the Hound wasn't that good.
That's a good movie.
Uh-oh. I didn't like Fox and the Hound, but once you got to The Great Mouse Detective, the movies you could see a little improvement. I mean, I don't think Oliver and Company was as good as The Great Mouse Detective, and neither was Rescuers Down Under. But once you have gone from The Great Mouse Detective, you then get into The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King. Some of the best Disney movies of all time. So I think The Great Mouse Detective was the sign of change.
Good choices. Very good, Luke. Justin Heyman, what do you got?
I have some overlap here. The first one that I have on my list, like Anthony said, was Tron. And I think that's a little bit of the growing up in that time period and being a little bit of a tech geek. But I always thought that the light cycles could have made a cool attraction, so... probably not one that would have lasted very long, although with them reviving it now, like Tom said, maybe it could have. But
gonna have to watch that box office next year.
Yeah, I have to keep an eye on things. The second one, and it's just an overlooked film, animated film, is The Incredibles.
You stole it off my list.
Unfortunate by going last.
Exactly.
The luck of the draw.
There's just quite a few, you know, quite a bit of action in this movie, and quite a lot of good characters in this movie that I think really could lend themselves to a number of different types of attractions. So, you know, and we've heard some rumors about maybe an Incredibles ride, maybe not an Incredibles ride. You know, it's been bounced around for quite some time now that they should be getting something, but I'm, you know, not so sure that's just a wish list.
Remember the rumors of a attraction that would have utilized the Kuka arm, and then those rumors sort of died once Universal wrapped up that technology for their Wizarding World of Harry Potter attractions, whichever one may utilize it.
Yeah, and now we're seeing Kuka come back in Inventions, though. So
through a loophole, yeah.
Yeah, through a loophole. But who knows? So, but I always thought that could have made a very good ride. Overlapping with Luke, I also said Mary Poppins. I just think the combo animated, you know, live action film has always lended itself very good to dark rides. So it's unfortunate that this never came through, but I definitely think it is a movie that deserves an attraction. Continuing on with some of what has already been said, Ratatouille, I think, has, again, a number of good characters, some action scenes, some slower scenes that could go either way, you know, either a slower paced ride, or like Luke said, some sort of hybrid kind of coaster type thing could work very well. The last movie I have does have an attraction, but its attraction, I don't know, doesn't seem to see its full potential, even though it's a good attraction, which is Monsters, Inc. And I think this is the honorable mention to the Monsters, Inc. coaster that may or may not be happening. So between that and it was between that and The Little Mermaid, which is also getting an attraction now, albeit at a different park.
We believe it's also coming to Magic Kingdom.
We can hope.
Not official yet.
So between the two of them, since they're both almost halfway towards an attraction, I figured I just mentioned them both. But I've always thought, you know, like most of us have since Monsters came out, that it would just make a great roller coaster attraction. And
live that door chase.
Exactly. Not that the Laugh Floor is a poor attraction, because I think it is a pretty good attraction. I just think there's a lot more that can be done with that franchise.
Right, Marty?
That's right, Uncle Mike.
Marty Wazowski likes your mention there.
This next joke comes in from Justin from Jersey.
Let's continue. Justin, are you done?
Yeah, I'm all set.
Okay. Kyle Duffy, what are your five films?
Why? Kyle, don't take any of mine.
I'll try not to. I'm not going to promise anything. I guess I'll mention the ones that have already been mentioned here. WALL-E, you know, definitely. You know, I think this is the best Pixar film ever. You know, and I haven't seen Up yet, but we'll see how that goes. The Incredibles, definitely. And now we'll go to the three that have not been mentioned yet. I'm going to go with The Lion King.
Kyle, what did I just tell you?
Scott,
it
was on mine too.
I think The Lion King has absolute potential in the parks as a dark ride. I mean, we've seen it as a stage show at the Animal Kingdom and kind of a puppet show at the Magic Kingdom, but
and still Circle of Life at Epcot.
Circle of Life at Epcot. I think this would make a perfect dark ride. I think it has the scenes in the movie that would just be so cool to see in a real three-dimensional world in a dark ride. I think it'd just be incredible. And the two more I have, this might be a shock to some of you, but growing up, I really loved this movie. The Black Cauldron probably won't happen because of the nature of the film and how dark it is, but I thought it was really cool, and I think seeing this as maybe kind of a ride would be really neat.
Well, if you got out to Tokyo a few years ago, you could have seen the Horned King in there. Castle tour attraction. That was
that's right.
That and Gurgi's Munchies, I believe, were the only two park references, and I believe Gurgi's Munchies was at Magic Kingdom.
You know, as much as that film was dark, I think it did have a good story to it, and you know, it's one of the lesser films that I enjoy. And last but not least, this is probably going to be weird, but I thought just now, National Treasure, I thought was a really good film. The second one was okay, but I thought the first one was really cool. I don't know if I see this much as a ride, but maybe like maybe a show or something like that. I think. Go ahead.
I have a good idea.
Yeah.
Kim Possible sort of experience, but National Treasure.
There you go. Yeah, I think that'd be pretty cool.
Scott just got really excited.
Yeah. Well, not if you take Kim Possible out of the equation.
No, no, he just was happy you mentioned Kim Possible.
Yeah. I think the problem with National Treasure is it's so similar to Indiana Jones. And since they already have Indiana Jones, why would you use Nicolas Cage when you have Indiana Jones? Like, that's the way I look at it.
But I did enjoy the film, so I think there's potential there. But,
you know. But if you could do it like that with the puzzles and everything,
yeah,
put it
maybe
in
an interactive walkthrough sort of thing somewhere rather than just walking around a pre-existing area.
Well, if there's for some in the future, if we do see a third movie, maybe we can see that.
They get rid of the Millennium Village.
Hey, I'm going to a pin event there. How many times do we have to go over this? All right, Scott, try not to steal any of mine.
All right, well, honestly, there's just not enough Finding Nemo in the parks right now. Okay. So, and you know, to Pirates of the Caribbean totally needs a ride. No, let's mention the ones. WALL-E, totally, hands down, so atmospheric, wonderful characters. I think WALL-E would totally benefit from a type of ride. I don't want to say necessarily the ride system of Crush's Coaster, but the combination of a dark ride and a thrill ride, I think would benefit WALL-E really, really well. That kind of where you go through show scenes and then zip around and then more show scenes. I think that would really, really work for WALL-E. Incredibles, look how well Universal's done with superheroes over there. Why haven't we utilized our own superhero property? It could totally work for something. 4D attraction like Spider-Man. Incredibles could fit very, very well. And you'd have an awesome attraction.
They're in Block Party Bash.
Yeah, but I don't. For my list, I don't count like appearances. I mean, I'm counting attractions.
I know it was a joke.
I just said, and Incredibles one of my favorite movies, probably the only one behind WALL-E, and it needs a ride. Lion King, where's the Lion King ride? I know it's got two shows, but this was huge. This was one of Disney's biggest films ever, and it's been topped by like three of them, right? Or not that many. It's still up there. This was a huge, enormous property, and there's no ride? Like, no, like, land? Like, no real presence? And I guess Festival of Lion King is as good as we're going to get, but, like...
You may have to wait, because look at Little Mermaid. It only took 20 years for them to start construction.
I know,
that
one, too. It's just... A show is not going to give you the connection and the experience that... You know, because shows always have to take place sort of after the movie or in some weird offshoot of the movie. We like, you want to be in the universe of the movie or meet with the stories and think about that.
Show is more of the music more than anything. I mean, I enjoyed the show. I think the show is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, but The Lion King is so much more than music. The Lion King is so... It needs a dark ride. Absolutely. You know, WALL-E, maybe sort of like a half thrill ride, half dark ride. Incredibles, I'm thinking like a 4D kind of attraction.
You're looking for the perfect tie-in with Animal Kingdom. I mean, that is the property to put a major e-ticket for the family in Animal Kingdom.
Why isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We'll have time to do many of these projects in our new segment coming up in a few weeks, Imagineer That, which I'm plugging now.
So. All right, so I've got two left. First one, again, it's not like it's not represented anywhere in the park, but my... fourth one is Mulan. I loved that movie. That's one of my favorite traditional Disney movies. I think it's a classic. I think it's up there with Little Mermaid and Lion King. And I think, again, the culture of China, you know, the atmosphere, the locale, the various locales of that movie, and of China in general, because the Chinese heritage is so rich, you could, again, maybe a walkthrough or maybe also a dark ride. There's so much you could do for that movie. There's so much you could do with the story and the, you know, the fable, the fairy tale like qualities of it. I just love that movie. I think it should be represented in the parks more, aside from just like a meet and greet in China. I mean, I'm glad it's there, but you know, with the colors, the red fireworks, and then the white snow, and the rain, and when she leaves, there's just so much visual imagery that comes to mind. How could we not make like a dark ride out of that? And my last one is going. It was my trump card. I knew it wasn't going to get picked by anyone. Hopefully, maybe Tom will agree with me. Maybe not. My last one, and it's going to sound weird.
No.
Is Enchanted.
I knew it. I knew you were going to have it. I knew it.
Because as soon as I saw that movie, don't ask me why, but my mind immediately started thinking about how that could be an attraction. I don't know why. Enchanted was such an under. You talk about Bolt being underutilized. I think Enchanted was incredibly underutilized. And I think the duality of that nature, again, just like Roger Rabbit, although it's a little more half and half as opposed to mixed in, I think that was, it's such a rich premise.
My turn now. All right. Already mentioned WALL-E. Again, Tomorrowland is begging for a WALL-E attraction. Absolutely. Yeah. Lion King, I'm thinking family thrill ride e-ticket. You know, maybe a water ride with a drop. I know it's Splash Mountain-esque, but, you know, maybe make the drop a little smaller so that, you know, no one will really be afraid to go on it. Maybe like a little bit taller than the Pirates drop, maybe. But we'll leave that again for Imagineer that. And, of course, Enchanted, dark ride, e-ticket, thrill ride, whatever. There's a lot of possibilities with that movie, and probably a lot of that because it feeds off a lot of classic Disney animated films anyway, so...
Yeah, the ride itself could almost be a parody of rides.
Yeah,
like, wow. The way the movie paid loving tribute to animated features, the ride could pay tribute to lovingly to other dark rides.
Absolutely. All right, next one, and I have two that no one mentioned, surprisingly. For Walt Disney World, Sleeping Beauty.
I know
we have Maleficent appearing in all these shows, and you have the dragon in Fantasmic, but I have this urge to see that dragon in audio animatronics form in an attraction. That is what I want to see at Walt Disney World. It is a brilliant, I mean, the entire thing could make a great dark ride, but that dragon in any kind of form in an attraction could be really stellar. I mean, if you're looking for the show stealer of just the walkthrough out at Disneyland, it's by far the scene where Maleficent turns into the dragon. It's the show stealer for Fantasmic. So imagine how that could be in ride form. I know it might be overdoing the whole Maleficent dragon thing, but maybe that's why I want a Sleeping Beauty attraction. Not a walkthrough. I want a ride through more than anything. Yeah. But definitely a film series underutilized in Florida, but obviously a major film series for California, seeing as though the castle is supposed to be Sleeping Beauty's castle. The final one, which I'm shocked that no one came up with, Alice in Wonderland. I know we have the Mad Tea Party, but it's not enough. The dark ride out at Disneyland is a classic. I think we need to find a way to get a version of that into the Magic Kingdom, if not a completely new Alice in Wonderland ride. This is something that the folks at WDI could have a field day with, because there are so many things you could do great visual effects with from that movie, from the Cheshire Cat appearing and disappearing, and just all the insanity that is the Alice in Wonderland film. Dark Ride or whatever, I think that film series is so tremendously popular that it's almost ridiculous that, you know, a film of similar popularity like Peter Pan has as much mention and Alice only has the little teacup ride, which is a lot of fun and is a classic, but not what I think they could do with that franchise.
That's very interesting. I guess I didn't think about it because of the ride in Disneyland.
It looks like that is going to wrap up our very crazy discussion, and once again, a discussion that you voted for. gentlemen, we now have a rare occurrence on the program, an interview. And rather than going out to the Disney community, we decided to turn now to the Disney online community. And joining us is someone you're probably well aware of already, our good friend Adam Goodger of the Disney Brit Podcast. How are you, Adam?
Hi, Tom. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm quite well.
Good.
So I know we've been working on getting this interview done for a while because you guys over at DisneyBrit.com have a lot of interesting stuff going on. So before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about your Disney background. Like, when did it all start for you? Was it a Disney movie? Was it a trip to the parks? Where did it all begin and snowball from?
It's probably going to have been, I was probably about 10, so we're looking around about 1990. My parents took us out to Walt Disney World for the first time. We did, I think it was 2 weeks out there. Spent a lot of time in Walt Disney World itself, and it sort of grew from there, really, and I just became quite a big fan. Started to read upon things, tried to make my own trips out there. And of course, then 4 years later, Disneyland Paris opened, which meant I had something a lot closer to home, so I was able to go out and visit that as well. And it sort of snowballed from there, really, just sort of generally reading things and things like that. And over the past few years, thought that actually maybe there's not a lot out in the UK for people who want to be interested in Disney from a British point of view, that maybe we could do something for them as well. And that's really how the podcast came about. And that's really where we are now.
So you pretty much explained how the podcast came about. So when did you officially decide, you know, there should be a podcast, you know, for Disney fans in the UK by Disney fans in the UK? When did you come to that decision? And then, you know, how did you decide what you wanted to do on that show?
Well, originally there was another UK-based Disney podcast, of which I was sort of involved with. And then for some unknown reason, sort of the host of that podcast sort of disappeared off the face of the earth. We've never been able to find him. And I just thought it was a real shame that there was sort of nothing around. So at that point, I decided that, I'd look into podcasting, how you did it, you know, how easy it was, or whether there were certain things you need to do, and found that actually it wasn't that difficult at all. And it was at that point that we decided we'd sort of take the reins and create this British podcast. With regards to what we put on it, we wanted to really focus on not only sort of the history and the trivia of Disney itself, but also the unique angle of, you know, how do you plan a Disney holiday for people coming from the UK? Because for guys out in America, and I know some of the guys that listen to your show, they're used to living in 95 degrees, you know, 90% humidity in Florida without a problem. Whereas over here in the UK, you know, we never get that sort of temperature. We never get that sort of humidity. And it's about saying to people, you know, if you're going to America in the summer, these are the things you need to think about. These are the pitfalls you might find by traveling over from the UK. And it was sort of giving that sort of angle, I suppose, really, something that isn't already out there.
So pretty much it was the idea that you could offer something that maybe we over here in the States, obviously not being from there, could offer.
Yeah, a little bit like that. And it was also sort of adding to what was already out there. Obviously, there are a lot of Disney podcasts out there in the US. Yeah. And we didn't want to create a show that didn't appeal to the US audience as well. You know, we have a fairly sizable US audience as well as a UK audience. And one of the things that we decided to do was to focus on Disneyland Paris a lot more, because there's no podcast really out there at all that gives any sort of detail to Disneyland Paris. So we decided that our show would be Walt Disney World and Disneyland Paris orientated. And we sort of share the amount of information from both of those parks equally, really.
That's really a good point, because I think you'll agree with me that, you know, the Disney online community is an often huge, expansive place full of all these different websites and things. But
yeah,
even with Disneyland Paris, even when it comes to just general websites, there's not a whole lot out there.
There's not a massive amount out there at all. And some of the ones that are out there, because of the size of the resort for one person to cover, don't necessarily get updated as much as they could be. And especially with it being a non-English language park, and it being so far away, a lot of the websites that are out there that are detailed aren't necessarily in the English language. And that was one of the things we found, that there's not a massive resource out there for those English-speaking people who want to visit Disneyland Paris, want to know more about it. And that was sort of the reason why we set up Mouse Meets, which we'll talk about in a bit, and sort of had that as part of the podcast.
And you made a good point, the size of Disneyland Paris for maybe our U.S. audience that doesn't realize this. I believe Disneyland Paris, as far as the land they own, is second largest Disney resort next to Walt Disney World.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's sizable. If you look at the park's sort of size, you're looking at around sort of Disneyland California size. But the actual land itself, you could easily build a third, even a fourth park on that sort of land that they've got, as well as expand all the hotels they have already. There's more than enough size to create a European Walt Disney World.
Which is why many of us were surprised when they built the small Studios park in 2002.
Yeah. And hopefully they're beginning to expand on that.
Yeah, well, there's been some recent additions there, the Toon Studios and stuff, and I know they have the Tower of Terror now, which I'm sure you're excited about.
And Toy Story Playland is on its way next year as well. It's been something that's rumored, but John Lasseter sort of let it slip in a recent interview at Cannes that they're actually in the process of building that. So that's something we're getting that's going to be brand new as well.
Yeah, so we're sure you'll end up with Toy Story Mania at some point in the future.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt.
All right, so as far as going back to the Disney Brit podcast, as we got off course a little bit there. What do you think makes I know you talked about from, of course, a British perspective now, how it differs from the other shows out there, but what really is the difference between the Disney Brit podcast and maybe a lot of the other Disney podcasts out there? What differentiates them?
Well, I think we're very similar in the style to yourself, in the fact that we don't try and take ourselves too seriously. We do like to have a bit.
Seriously, get out of here.
We do try to have a bit of a laugh with the segments that we do. You know, we do try to keep things entertaining. We do the news and the rumors at the beginning of every show, and actually, sometimes that ends up being the longest segment of the whole show because we discuss it. We don't just give the news; we talk about it and give opinions, and also what the impact of it is on a UK audience. And I think it is the fact that we have a lot of interesting segments. We have a lot of different viewpoints. We have a lot of listeners who like to give their own viewpoints because obviously we're the only UK podcast. And it just, I think, gives us the opportunity to really experiment with a lot of stuff because nobody's really experimented from a UK point of view before. And that gives us the chance to sort of, you know, to have a play with things and have a bit of fun with it, I suppose.
So I know for me personally with the WDWNT network, I've been surprised in a lot of ways. And one thing has definitely been the involvement of the audience. How has the involvement of the audience been thus far with the Disney Brit podcast and a few of the other projects you're working on?
Well, we've got we get a lot of emails from people. We don't have a voicemail as yet. We're currently working on that, and that's something we'd like to bring. But we do have that sort of interactivity. We actually use the WDisneyW.com forums. They're very, very kindly over there allowed us to base our forum. And we have all sorts of bits and pieces that we put on there that people sort of join in with. We're just literally wrapping up a top 7 must-see for Walt Disney World for UK audience. And we've done it park by park. We've done it for the rest of Walt Disney World. And we're literally on the last of the poll now to find out what the listeners' top 7 must-sees of Walt Disney World are. So we have sort of those interesting segments as well. We also have a monthly trivia quiz, which is something I don't think any other podcasts do as far as I know. And because we do a show bi-monthly, what we do is we give the questions in the first show and then we give the answers and a bit more sort of information about each question in the second show. And we're now beginning to get people who are having a go and sending in their questions. It's become a bit of a competition with a few people about who can get them in the fastest. What we'd like to do, and one of the things we're thinking of, is to actually do a live trivia quiz as part of the show. So, you know, we're looking at that sort of interactivity that we can possibly introduce to the show more than we have already.
Very cool. And you just brought up another big difference that we haven't really touched upon. Your show's actually twice a month or every two weeks, right?
Yeah, originally we started monthly, and I felt that actually we were beginning to put together shows that were 2+ hours. And there was a lot of people who were sort of saying, it's great, but surely you can spread these out, you know, give us shorter bursts more often. And we decided when Juz joined the team, because Juz Griffiths is he's the co-host as well. He joined the team after the first sort of 5 or 6 episodes. And we decided that actually with two of us, we could share out the workload a little bit more and that he'd be able to help with getting everything ready for recording an episode. And that now we find that actually bi-weekly works really, really well for us. And it seems to work really, really well for the audience as well, as they get the opportunity to listen and respond.
You're making me feel bad here that you were feeling, you're feeling bad about 2-hour episodes every, you know, 4 weeks. It's usually a weekly occurrence here, but
But they're very enjoyable, Tom. They do make my car journey to work go very quickly each week.
Must be a long drive to work.
Yeah, no,
All right. Let's step away from the podcast for a moment, and let's learn a little more about Adam Goodger, one of the hosts of the Disney Brit podcast. Let's find out some more of your favorite Disney stuff and what I'm going to call the lightning round here. So,
okay, go on.
I'm going to ask you for some of your favorites, and maybe if you could explain a little bit why. So let's start with your favorite Disney character.
Difficulty. If I'm going for classic, I'm going for Tigger. If I'm going for contemporary, I'm going for Stitch.
Excellent.
Stitch, I just the mischievousness of Stitch. And I know you guys really do like to poke fun at Stitch's Great Escape. And
I don't think that's a shot at the character.
I kind of like it, but I know what you mean. But Stitch has always been one of my favorites just because of sort of the mischievous nature of him. And Tigger, I've known Tigger ever since I obviously was little and grew up with that character. And I think he's just been one that's been a memory from childhood, really.
Another mischievous character as well.
Yeah, he is.
And to be honest, I really do like Stitch's Supersonic Celebration, so...
I'm looking forward to seeing that when I come out in the summer. I've not seen that one yet.
I think you'll like it.
Good.
We'll go see it together. It'd be fun.
Okay, that'd be cool.
All right, next up, favorite Disney movie?
There's a few. If we're going to include Pixar, then I'm going to have to go for something like The Incredibles. I really, really like The Incredibles. Oliver and Company is another favorite of mine, one that's not really had as much press as has Meet the Robinsons is another one. But I think my overall favorite movie, I think, has got to be Lion King. It's the one I remember from my childhood. It's the one I really remember going to see at the movies. So Lion King, I think, is one that really stands out for me.
All good choices. Oliver and Company, really off the beaten path there, but
yeah,
excellent film. Absolutely. All right, here's I know my tough one, but let's see if you could answer this easily. Favorite Disney attraction?
Haunted Mansion, without a shadow of a doubt.
When you got Pirates or Haunted Mansion as your favorite, it's easy. But when you get into that other realm, you know, I always find it hard to pick between the few. But
no, it's Haunted Mansion for me is just the intricate detail of the story, the amount of legends there are around about it, which is something that I put in my book. There's sort of about six legends that you can quite easily put to Haunted Mansion. But then, of course, I have the great joy of going over to Disneyland Paris, and we have Phantom Manor, which has yet another storyline completely different to that of Haunted Mansion. And it's just the theming of it. It's just the fact that they created this ride way, way back in sort of the 60s, and yet you ride it today in the version that obviously they've updated slightly in Walt Disney World, but it just still seems fresh. It doesn't look old, and it's just the clever, intricate details and tricks and special effects and ideas within that I just really stand out for me.
All right, now let me ask you a really tough question.
Well, then.
Which Haunted Mansion is your favorite? Disneyland, Walt Disney World, Phantom Manor? Which one?
Walt Disney World. And the reason for that is that in the Disneyland Paris version, the graveyard's missing. There isn't one. We have something called Phantom Canyon, which for me just doesn't work as well. So without a shadow of a doubt, it's Walt Disney World.
All right. Favorite Disney theme park?
No, that is a difficult one. I'm going to have to go Epcot, I think, just purely for the fact that everything is so different. There's the experiences you have are not to one theme or to one idea. That you can go to one pavilion and experience something completely different to another. You can go to the Living Seas and see Nemo, then suddenly 45-minute Universe of Energy, and then, of course, you've got World Showcase. So, in a way, it's two theme parks in one. And I think just the diversity of it, I think, which makes it my favorite.
Well, you've continued the tradition of everyone who's ever come on this show. Epcot is their favorite park. It's just something about it.
There is. Yeah, you're right.
All right. Final one. Your favorite Disney song?
It's got to be Mickey's Magical Party Time, the new theme tune to the Mickey's Magical Party at Disneyland Paris this year's. There's something about that I really like.
I do like that song. It is very good. Very catchy. We'll have to play it now on the show.
There's a really good version. There's some really, really horrid Europop dance versions as well. But
I like
some
the one
fantastic...
where there's really people singing in it.
Yes.
Not altered electronically in any way.
No. And there's a great orchestral version of it in the Mickey and Friends party show at Disneyland Paris. That's just, the music's fantastic. So it's got to be that one at the minute. That's definitely a favorite.
I would consider that the equivalent of the Celebrate You song out here in the U.S.
Yes,
now.
Yeah, it's the same sort of idea, yeah.
All right, so we completed the lightning round. Now I had two questions that were more out of curiosity for myself.
Okay.
Before we go back to Mouse Meats and some of your other projects. People from the United Kingdom going to Walt Disney World.
Yeah.
This has always been a mystery for me because, as you said, you know, since Disneyland Paris opened, you know, in the 90s, you've had that park and resort very close by. So why do people from the United Kingdom, why are they still compelled to come back over and over again to Walt Disney World? And it's a sizable audience.
I think on a basic level, cost is one of the big things. Disneyland Paris is not the cheapest place to go. And with the current exchange rate due to recession and everything at the moment, it's costing an awful lot of money. To give you an example, we were out in Disneyland Paris recently. We went to Walt's and had one of Walt's gourmet burgers and paid €29. So that works out at about $40-something, I think it was, for a burger, which is a lot of money. And actually, if you compare how long you spend in Disneyland Paris, you can probably get four, if you're lucky, maybe 5 days out of a trip to Disneyland Paris. And for that sort of price, for maybe a couple of $100 extra, you can get 2 weeks out in Walt Disney World. And I think that's a massive draw. The weather is also a massive draw. And the other thing with Disneyland Paris is the fact that the parks aren't as well developed as they are out in Walt Disney World. Personally, I think the Disneyland Park in Disneyland Paris is by far one of the best architecturally created parks out of all of them.
Absolutely.
But it still doesn't have the breadth of rides as you get over in Walt Disney World and the breadth of experiences. One of the things with Disneyland Paris is you find you do the parks in the day and there's not necessarily so much in the evening. We do have Buffalo Bill's Wild West show, which is a fantastic dinner show. But there's not as much in the evening to keep you on property or keep you going. And there's also not a lot around Disneyland Paris. And I think Walt Disney World is more of a complete package for a family holiday. There's far more to keep a family going for a couple of weeks than there is to go to Disneyland Paris. Disneyland Paris, to me, is more of a short break sort of trip, whereas I find Walt Disney World is definitely more of a full-on holiday.
Yeah, and you said Disneyland Paris not as well developed. And
no.
We have to keep in mind that it's still relatively young.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. 15 years is nothing in comparison to Walt Disney World. And 15 years in the lifetime of that. Sorry, yeah. 15 years in the lifetime of that park is very, very young indeed. And no doubt we will see more and more come. And it's just over time that we'll see that.
All right, so let's flip the coin here. Now, if I live in the United States, is there any reason, if any, I should travel to Disneyland Resort Paris? Or now, I believe now they're calling it just Disneyland Paris again.
Yeah, they can't quite decide what they want to call it at the moment. It's swapping between names depending on who you speak to and what you watch or what you see. I think with Disneyland Paris, it is a completely unique experience in the fact that it isn't, the first language isn't English. And that's always quite entertaining to see how they work that. And it's also interesting to see how the Europeans do the Disney magic, so to speak. We have some experiences over here that you don't get over in the US. Space Mountain in Disneyland Paris, I think, is by far the best Space Mountain Walt Disney Imagineers have ever created. It obviously has inversions in it, the music in the headrests, the actual theming inside when you're actually on the roller coaster itself. I think it's well worth seeing. I know Luke's mentioned this many, many times about what the Disneyland Paris's Space Mountain is like. But it's the European Disney, and it's seeing Main Street in a different way. Main Street obviously has to be done in a very different way. The castle, you know, we're quite lucky, the fact that, especially in France, you go 10 miles and there's a castle. And they have to really think about how you can create a different Disney castle that didn't look like one you can find 10 minutes down the road. And it is Disney with a European flair. It is very different. It's not a place that I think US audiences will come to every year, for example, but I think it's definitely, just like Disney Sea is, or Hong Kong, Tokyo, all those sort of places are places that you should really come and experience once and see how Disney does it in a different country.
Absolutely, and definitely a goal of mine, as I'm sure a number of our listeners, is to visit all of the Disney parks around the world.
Yes, so I'm definitely on that list as well.
All right, you might have, you probably have me beat thus far. How many parks have you been to?
And EC, I've only done Walt Disney World and Disneyland Paris. California's on my list to do within the next sort of 4 or 5 years, but I'm only on two resorts so far.
All right, so you're tied with me because I've got the US parks down, so we're tied. All right, so let's let's get back to some of your projects. We already talked about the Disney Brit podcast, and now let's get on to the big one. Let's talk about Mouse Meats. Tell everyone exactly what Mouse Meats is.
Mouse Meats, think Mouse Fest, and that's really similar to what Mouse Meats is. It was probably around October, November time last year that we were listening to you guys preparing yourselves for Mouse Fest again. And we were thinking that, you know, we'd love to be out there, but it's just never going to happen. And then it got us thinking about, well, actually, how many other UK and European listeners, Disney fans are there that don't get to have the same experience? And it was then that we began to think about, well, could we do it over in Disneyland Paris? And we began to put the ideas together and began to think about it. And Mouse Meets was born. The idea came last December. We really announced it. It's going to be on the 5th and 6th of December this year in Disneyland Paris. And we've chosen that for the reasons of the fact that it's the Christmas season, all those sort of things are starting to come in. And it's designed to be a gathering of Disney fans from all over the world. We've got people from the US who are possibly coming over as well. People from France, from Amsterdam, from Belgium, from Germany, from the UK, from Spain. Just all coming together. And we've got meets that we're organizing with Disney themselves, some great stuff that we're starting to put together. But also we're looking at people who are attending to also bring their own ideas, to have their own meets, whether it be going to watch a parade together or just having a meal or just meeting to have a chat. We want to make it so it's a community thing. So we're not planning everything. We are planning some things and people are bringing other things to it as well.
So you said there's some Disney involvement. Have you approached Disney about anything concerning Mouse Meats? And have they...
Yeah. We have spoken to Disney. Disney are very much involved. They're helping us with things like group bookings for hotels. We're lucky enough to have the Newport Bay Club as our base. We've got one project that we're working with Disney that we haven't announced yet. That's pretty much sorted now, pretty much on its way. And the other one that we have got that we have announced is that Disney have been working with us that we have on the Saturday evening a meal at the Walt's American Restaurant on Main Street, of which we're going to have in attendance an Imagineer who's going to do sort of a question, answer and presentation as well. So that's an event we're really excited about. And then we have other events as well that we've begin to put together as part of the event itself.
Excellent. And I can imagine the work that goes into this, being someone who works with WDW Celebrations, knowing how hard it is to sometimes put together just a simple meal with a guest.
Yeah, it is. And Disney have been fantastic and have really helped us with everything we have done so far. And, you know, long may that continue. And it does make life a lot easier if you've got people who really are on the ball and really do know exactly what they need to do and when. And that's really helping things along. But I say that we really are looking for people to come and to enjoy. This year it's going to cost people absolutely nothing other than their accommodation and their park tickets. We're not charging for like any sort of admin fees or anything like that. That's all being covered by sponsorship. There may be things like brochures and things like that we may ask people to join in with the cost of, but at the moment we're trying to keep it as free as we possibly can.
Excellent. And I love the idea of having the attendees come up with, you know, different meet ideas and stuff. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's what we wanted to do. I know I certainly have two things at the moment. I'm thinking of, I'm in the process of planning now, and I think you can vouch for how difficult it is for history walks, to do a history walk and group ride of Phantom Manor, because there is so much stuff there for that and the Boot Hill graveyard that's attached to it. I'm planning on doing something like that. And we had... for those people who know the show or may see the show, if you go over to DisneyBrit.com, we did a sort of a video diary when we were last out in Disneyland Paris, me and Juz. And as part of that, we did the what we call the first annual Disney Brit Buzz Lightyear Laser Blast competition, which is just an excuse for us to compete against each other to see who could win. And we're going to have the second annual Buzz Lightyear Laser Blast Disney Brit competition as part of Mouse Meets, although it's in the same year. So second annual doesn't quite work, but we'll doesn't matter. It's fine. And we're going to have that a competition of that sort of thing as well. There are things that are sort of definitely in place at the moment. Plus, we'll have, I think, a Disney Brit trivia quiz meet as well, where we'll have a sort of a live version of the quiz show. So things are coming together nicely, and people will bring their other ideas as well. And hopefully it will become, you know, a real community event.
Sounds great. Let me ask you this. Now, it's no secret, as you alluded to, there have been a number of Disney fan events held at Walt Disney World and Disneyland. It's been done many, many times. You talk about Mouse Fest and West Fest and, of course, WDW celebrations. What have you learned, positive and negative, that you're going to use for this event from those?
I think one of the things we've tried to do is not to make it too long. We have purposely made it over a weekend. It's a Saturday and a Sunday. That means that people don't need to take any extra time off work because obviously it'd be in the weekend. Friday evening, late Friday evening, I think we'll probably do some unofficial things. But I think that's one of the things we learned, that actually if we do it the weekend, especially with the audience that are mostly going to be coming, it's not necessarily going to be as part of their holiday sort of thing. It's going to be something they're going to do, especially for that weekend. We chose the time of year that we did because we know that obviously there's the season of Christmas and that people are able to come and sort of celebrate that as part of it as well. And we try to keep away from the time of year when people are normally going on their major holidays. And that's one of the things I know Mouse Fest usually does. So that people don't feel obliged to have it as a summer holiday or as an Easter holiday, anything like that. It's just something that people are able to come and do extra if they want to. And they were sort of the things that we took from it. And we are learning as we go along, and no doubt we will learn more and more each year that it comes around. But they were some of the things that we experienced. And from talking to some of the organizers for Mouse Fest as well, they've given us the tips for those sort of things.
Mm-hmm. And final question about Mouse Meets. What do you hope to get out of Mouse Meets? What will make Mouse Meets different from every other fan event that's been held up until this point? And what do you hope to get out of it?
Well, I think the biggest difference is the fact that it isn't in the US. Yeah. I don't know whether we didn't really go into it to want to get anything out of it necessarily. All we want is for people to be able to come and meet other Disney fans and to be able to come together and enjoy the weekend and to be able to really have the opportunity to become a Disney geek, I suppose. I've always gone to Disneyland Paris but with my family, without other so-called Disney geeks ourselves. I'll just tell you a quick story. Me and Juz were out in Disneyland Paris recently, and there's a ride photo on my Facebook page of us on Pirates of the Caribbean. Everybody else in the boat is sat facing forward, smiling at the camera, and you have these two men on the back row, which is us two, turned around facing backwards because we were looking at the ride mechanism for Pirates of the Caribbean as we were going down the drop. And you've just got this picture of our two backs. And it was just the chance for people just to be able to do that and not feel stupid or have family around going, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Why, the ride's in front of you. And I think it's just to give people a different experience of Disneyland Paris. The idea of the weekend is not to go and ride everything going. The idea is to go and experience the park in a different way to what you would do normally. And that's the sort of thing we're really trying to get out of it, I suppose.
And, you know, it's funny that you said that because that's really the same thing out of every organizer and from WDW celebrations. What you really realize from your first event on is that it's very different to experience the parks as a group with very like-minded people. Completely new experience. And I certainly hope everything goes well at Mouse Meets. It looks like it's shaping up to be a fantastic event. And for more information on Mouse Meets, where can our listeners go and what are the dates for Mouse Meets?
Dates for Mouse Meets are the 5th and 6th of December. They are obviously a Saturday and a Sunday. Most people will probably be coming up on the Friday evening itself, the 4th. You can go over to www.disneybrit.com/mousemeets.asp. It's mousemeets.asp. And over there we have the newsletter, last newsletter that went out. You can also sign up there to register your interest, where we'll send you out newsletters and you'll get all the information through when we get it for things like hotel bookings, etc. And that's really where everything will be based over on the sort of the subsection of the DisneyBrit.com website.
Well, Adam, I want to thank you so much for taking this time out of your schedule. If for our listeners, please go listen to the Disney Brit podcast, a great different perspective on the Disney community. And again, you can check that out at DisneyBrit.com. And if you can, head out to Mouse Meets. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. So, Adam, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me on. And just to say that obviously you can get obviously Disney Brit over on iTunes as well. We do have like a Mouse Meets update segment on the show, usually every other show, to give people an idea of how Mouse Meets is going as well. So you can come over and check that out. So thank you for having me, Tom. It's been great to sort of talk about my experiences to somebody else.
Thank you very much.
Let's open up the inbox, empty the trash, and clean out the spam filter, because it's time to check our WDWNT mail. Here to answer your questions is Tom Corliss and his team of postal employees.
Welcome to WDWNT Mail, where we read your questions and comments on the WDW News Today podcast. I'll be flying alone this week because we have a number of emails to get through, so let's not waste any time. Let's get right to it. First email is from Keaton Koch, and Keaton writes us, "Hello, WDW News Today. My name is Keaton. I'm a huge fan of the website. I read all your news articles daily and posts, and I listen to all of your podcasts." Thank you very much, Keaton. "I used your photo reports on Disneyland News Today recently for a week-long trip I took to Anaheim, just to be prepared for all of the construction that was happening at the Disneyland Resort. Glad that could be of use. I just had one question, though. Could you add a post or section on the Virtual Magic Kingdom, otherwise known as VMK? Just yesterday, I felt the urge and need to play it. The last time I had played the game was around a year ago when the Virtual Magic Kingdom shut down. Thank you very much for your time." And that is from Keaton Koch. Thank you very much, Keaton. And I will tell you that we are kicking around the idea of doing a one-time segment right here on the WDW News Today podcast, and maybe even simulcast it on Disneyland News Today, since it is a, an all-encompassing discussion, far bigger than just Walt Disney World-based, as it was. We'll definitely do a segment looking back at some fond memories of the Virtual Magic Kingdom. I know I was on there occasionally, had some fun with some of the games and such they had set up on there, and it really was a great little service, and remember, it lasted much longer than it was supposed to, so the VMK fans were a little spoiled there in that they got a much longer run than expected. But definitely in the future, we're going to string together some staff members here that played it, and maybe get a few of you, our listeners, involved. If any of you were VMK fanatics, know a lot about it, and want to come on and help us talk about that, be sure to contact us, and I'll definitely keep you in mind for that segment coming up soon. But definitely, Keaton, we're going to take a look back at the Virtual Magic Kingdom on a not-so-distant episode of this show. On to our next email from Mr. John Gibson, and John writes, "Hey, Tom, really enjoy your host of websites and podcasts. They really help me get my Disney fix between trips. I especially enjoyed the 20 biggest moments in Disney's Hollywood Studios history. It was a great series. It was like the perfect fusion between the Back to the Future and What Were They Thinking segments. Question: with Walt Disney World's upcoming 40th anniversary, will you be doing a similar series? Perhaps the 40 biggest moments in Walt Disney World history? Just a thought. Thanks for all your efforts in keeping us in touch with the world. Much appreciated, Mr. John Gibson." Well, John, I can tell you that next year on the Disneyland News Today podcast, they will be indeed doing a series, the 55 biggest moments in Disneyland history for the 55th anniversary. And I think when 2011 rolls around, we'll definitely get those 40 biggest moments in Walt Disney World history going. But we got a little time before then. We've still got the rest of this year and all of next year, but hopefully the Disneyland countdown can tide you over, and then 2011 will kick off that countdown. But thank you for the suggestion, and yes, we have been thinking about it, and yes, we most likely will be doing it. Next email comes from Mr. Connor Shearer. Hello there, this is Connor Shearer again. I just thought I'd inform you that next year during the spring I will audition for a character performance job that I asked about in the last email. I'd also like to thank you for all the help that you gave me. Well, no problem, Connor, that is what we're here for. I have a few new questions as well. These are actually maybe good ideas for discussions with all the staff members due to the open-ended nature of them, so I thought I'd send them to you and see what happened. Well, let's see what happens. First question, what is your favorite place on Walt Disney World property? That spot that hits you and it's like, yes, this is Walt Disney World and this is why I know and love it. Connor's would have to be when I exit the monorail at the Epcot station and turn to walk down the ramp towards the entrance of the park. It just hits me and takes my breath away every time. Seeing Spaceship Earth and the entire park in all of its majesty, even with the faint sound of all the music in the park drifting ever so lightly to my ears. Not to mention having one of my favorite phrases in all the parks. Yes, I get to say it on the show. Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas. It's just the best feeling looking out at my favorite park and feeling the excitement build up inside me. Well, Connor, I can tell you this. After reading this, I went and put up the new WDWNT interactive poll on the forums for episode 98, and this question is up for voting. So if it wins the voting, Connor, this segment will indeed happen as the very last regular roundtable discussion in this show's history. So hopefully we'll get to that. On to your next one. What is your favorite hidden attraction at Walt Disney World? A small little accent that most people overlook or just take for granted that it's just special. For example, the talking trash can in Tomorrowland, push. And for Connor, it's actually his favorite is Divine, the walking vine in Animal Kingdom. He's not entirely sure why, but it's just neat how she seems just like a plain old vine while she stands still. But as soon as she begins to walk, you realize and your eyes are almost fooled and there's just some magic in the air. I know it's a little thing, but I look forward to seeing it every trip I go. Well, Connor, I could actually direct you to a segment we've done already, and that is the Favorite Hidden Gems of Walt Disney World, episode number 86 of the WDW News Today podcast. So go back and listen to that, and you'll hear some of our favorite hidden gems as well, and hopefully you'll enjoy that. And Connor wraps up with thank you for your time. I know it's a bit of a lengthy email, but I hope you enjoy it nonetheless. Keep up the excellent work. And yes, Connor, we always enjoy answering questions and comments from our listeners. As I said before, that's why we're here. On to our next email from our good friend Jerry Levely. Hey guys, just fired up episode number 94. I just once again wanted to say how much I enjoy the podcast. I love the mix at the beginning and the end as well. I miss the to all who come to this happy place welcome, but nonetheless, you guys do a great job. Keep them coming. Now back to work. And that is for Jerry Levely. And hello, Levelys! Inside joke. They got it. But anyway, I believe Jerry's talking about to all who come to this happy place, welcome. A long time ago, for some reason, we used to begin this show with a piece from Disneyland and the Parade of Dreams, and it actually kicked in with Walt's famous phrase, to all who come to this happy place, welcome, when he opened Disneyland, of course, the dedication. And yeah, that was a great part of the show, and of course we had Welcome to Our Family time playing behind me as I did my little spiel at the beginning. But we've moved on now, Jerry. We had Disney Dreams Come True, and now we have Celebrate a Dream Come True, and I'm sure in the future we'll have something else playing behind me at the beginning of the show, so stay tuned. On to our next email from Sean in Cary, North Carolina. Again, if I pronounce your name or your city wrong, please, I apologize. Don't take any offense to it. And Sean says he is a longtime listener to the podcast and really enjoys the show. He just had to tell us that the Lee Ehrenberg interview was just awesome. What a great perspective he has, and he seems like such a cool guy. After the interview, I'm going to have to watch those movies again. Thank you for the interview and all of your work, Sean, again from Cary, North Carolina. And Sean, let me tell you what. Lee Ehrenberg is a really cool guy. He is such a normal, average guy, and it's so almost unreal when we first met him, how normal he is. Again, there's this aura around actors sometimes, famous actors that we, you know, as normal people who, you know, work a 5-day week and such, and see these people on our TV screens and at the movie theater, there's just an aura around them. But then when you sit down with some of them, you realize wow, they're just normal people. And I mean, Lee Ehrenberg is the perfect example of that. And just a fantastic, fantastic guy to sit and talk to. And we're definitely going to have him back at some time again in the future. Hopefully after he's in Pirates 4, that would be a lot of fun. So we're glad you enjoyed that. And I can't tell you how much we enjoyed that. And again, a thank you to Mr. John Rick from the Disney Pincast for putting that one together. Absolutely a lot of fun. We don't do interviews very often on these shows because, you know, I often get a little funny about interviews. Does it make us look a little too professional? We are a show for the fans, so our interviews a little too professional, but that was one case where I was not passing that one up, and I'm glad everyone enjoyed it, and we enjoyed it immensely on this end as well. On to our next email from Mr. Jared Reynolds of Winter Springs, Florida. And Jared writes, "Hey, Tom, I have a few more questions. First question, is the Tomorrowland Transit Authority closed on account of Space Mountain, or is Disney making minor repairs to that attraction?" I can actually confirm that Disney is updating the Tomorrowland Transit Authority. It is 100% confirmed. At the very least, they are installing a new lighting and sound system above head, so when you pass by certain landmarks, you should hear those famous recordings a little clearer than you may have in the past. But from what I've been told, also there will be some other interesting new surprises on the Tomorrowland Transit Authority when it reopens in the late summer. I believe it reopens end of August, so stay tuned for that. Of course, WDW News Today will be there, as we always are, and as well, we'll be there for the reopening of Space Mountain come late November, so stay tuned. Next question, is Disney going to bring the Matterhorn bobsleds to Walt Disney World? And where would you think they would put it, and would it replace any rides? This is a very, very old rumor that practically goes back to opening day Walt Disney World. A lot of people are wondering if they're ever going to build it in Fantasyland. Quite frankly, I don't think it's ever going to happen. I mean, we have something almost eerily similar in Expedition Everest, while it is a very high-speed train ride compared to the minor thrills of the Matterhorn. Of course, Matterhorn is much older. Definitely a Space Mountain style, I guess you could say. Family-friendly roller coaster. Everest, more of a thrill-seekers roller coaster. But again, because there's a Yeti in our mountain, Everest, and there's a Yeti at the Matterhorn, I can't see them bringing the Matterhorn to Walt Disney World, unfortunately. But the good news is you could go out to Disneyland and see the Matterhorn. Actually, you don't have any more questions, but you do have final comments anyway. I think that you and the other cast members are very interesting. Thank you, I think. And hope you'll have a nice Memorial Day. Sincerely, Jared Reynolds. I hope you had a nice Memorial Day. It was a few weeks ago, but thank you very much, Jared, and be sure to send in more questions as you have them. On to our next email, which is from our good friend Kat in Okinawa, Japan. Hello, Kat. I love the podcast and have just currently caught up with a recent episode, so I thought I would take a chance to write in about Rock and Roller Coaster. I know that it was placed by listeners as number 2 on the list of the 20 biggest moments in Disney's Hollywood Studios history, and I just had to write in about this ride itself. I know that Scott Smith had mentioned his opinion about the ride and whatnot, saying that he felt it was a little bit of a random band they had chosen, and I have to say, unfortunately, that I cannot disagree more. It might not be something easily considered by someone who is not an Aerosmith fan or someone who really follows the music industry closely through the years, but Aerosmith is far and from just any band. First off, they have been around for years and years, transcending through many different music style changes and still managed to stay on top with hit songs, which has only in recent years slowed up. Even so, it is not surprising to hear an Aerosmith song on the radio, which is something else for a band that has been around as long as they have. They are also a band that I think is very well fitting for the whole idea of Hollywood Studios, being one of the very first bands to take their music and do the unthinkable with a remake of their hit song Walk This Way with Run DMC, which at the time was something that no one had ever thought of doing before, meshing the styles of rap and rock into one song that worked so well as it did, and even today, much like many of the Disney songs, is familiar to so many people. Not to mention, did you know that the song Walk This Way was actually inspired by a movie itself? That's right, the Mel Brooks classic Young Frankenstein was a film in which Igor, not Igor, said walk this way, and everyone followed mimicking the way he walked. This was apparently so funny that they felt a song was in the making, and so we have what we have today. Aside from the significance of the band, don't forget how important music is to the movies. There is no suspense, action, or otherwise feeling in a movie without the interpretation of something through a musical standpoint. Recording music is such an important aspect of the movie-making process. I think that they really filled a gap here in the studio aspect of the park, making it fun and entertaining. Let's be realistic, not many average American people are going to go on the 95-piece orchestra sit-and-float ride, where you can see a number of people and their string instruments replay 16 bars of music over and over until they get the feeling just right. Sure, that's the way it is for real, but it's not going to grab crowds. In the end, I don't think that is a ride that completely excludes everyone in all ways. Sure, you may not get the chance to take your little one on the ride and might have to wait for the rest of the family, but they make it easy to be able to sit in the courtyard and grab a Mickey Supreme bar and just listen to the music. Thanks for everything. Keep recording and I will keep listening. You guys really do brighten my day. Thank you very much, Kat. And again, I can't agree with you more on Rock and Roller Coaster. Again, Scott is not a thrill seeker, I would say, and there's many people like Scott out there, and we'll respect their opinions as well, but I would agree with you. Aerosmith is a band that's been around practically forever and has maintained popularity for quite some time, so it was a smart choice by Disney to go after Aerosmith. And, of course, Young Frankenstein, one of my favorite films, so Walk This Way, one of my favorite songs to go along with it. So thank you very much, Kat. I share your sentiments, and thank you for taking the time to send that to us. Our next email comes from Hunter. I was looking on a website about Expedition Everest, and I noticed that it said the ride had two audio animatronics figures. I only know of one, and that is the broken down Yeti. What is the other animatronic? Well, this was not an easy one to answer. I made about two or three phone calls on this one, and from what I was told, the confusion might have been the little bird that used to, at the very height, before you would, I hope I'm not spoiling the attraction for anyone who hasn't done it, but before you begin your, before you start going backwards where the track ends at the top of the mountain, there used to be this bird that would sort of fly a little bit into view. You'd hear the noise, you'd hear the bird calling, and then it would disappear. Now, from what I was told, the confusion might be there that that was not actually an audio animatronics figure, but that might have been the confusion. Other than that, the only audio animatronics figure in this attraction is indeed the Yeti. So I don't know if someone was confused there, but that may have been the confusion. But as far as I know and as far as I've been told, there's only one. On to our next email from Mr. Kevin Lawler. And he writes, I just wanted to let you know how much I love the WDWNT site, and I listen to the podcast religiously. I've been attending Walt Disney World my entire life, and I am obsessed with it. Join the club. You're in the right place, Kevin. I stumbled across your podcast about 2 months ago, and I've been listening to everything since episode one. Wow, you listened to those really bad ones at the beginning, didn't you? I think Kevin will agree with me. We've gotten much better since then. Something I especially enjoyed was when you did the rankings out of 10 for all of the Animal Kingdom attractions. With your 100th episode on the horizon, your top 20 moments in Disney's Hollywood Studios now done, I was thinking that it would be perfect time to do a top 100 list of all of Walt Disney World's attractions. I know, I'm sure you think this is an absurd amount of work, but I think making a master list with all of your staff ranking attraction shows and dining 1 to 100 and reporting 5 a week for 20 weeks would be a lot of fun. Just a thought. Sorry if you think I'm creating too big a project for you. Don't worry, I think your site and podcast is outstanding regardless of if you take this advice or not. Keep up the outstanding work, and that is from Mr. Kevin Lawler. Thank you very much, Kevin, for your suggestion. And as I said before, we're working on some more countdown lists. I do like your idea as well. Maybe far down the line after we get through that 40th anniversary list, it's a possibility, but I will tell you this, I would not mind doing another segment like we did for Animal Kingdom, ranking the attractions, because that was a lot of fun what we did for Animal Kingdom's 10th anniversary. I think we did the top 10 at 10, so it was the top 10 attractions at 10 years of the park, and we did have a lot of fun doing that, so I wouldn't mind doing that again for another park, and maybe we'll have to do that at some point, but thank you very much for the suggestion, Kevin, and we will keep that under advisement. For now, we will put that idea in the vault, and we will get back to you on it. Our next email, actually our next two emails and final two emails are similar in nature, so I'm going to address them both at the same time, and we're going to solve both of their problems at the end of the segment. First email from Andy Wood. I just started listening to your podcast, and as many time visitor to Walt Disney World, I found it really interesting. It's already getting me buzzing about a return next year. I wonder if you could tell me, though. In episode 91, about 3 minutes in, you played a version of Celebrate You, which I don't think was the Corbin Blue version. Was it the parade version? How do I get the full version of the song you played? I've done a certain amount of searching on the web, but usually ends with the conclusion that no full version of the song was made, except the Corbin Blue version. There seems to be an instrumental version on YouTube, which it suggests was made by Ricardo Padua, which I think sings in some of the adverts. I would be grateful if you could clear up my confusion. The song we play at the beginning of the show is from the brand new Celebrate a Dream Come True parade at the Magic Kingdom. It is from the Showstop. However, that is not even the only versions of this song that exist. There is the Corbin Blue version. As far as I know, there is a version that plays after Illuminations. There is the mix version of Corbin Blue and a new version that plays in the Move It, Shake It, Celebrate It Street Party out at Walt Disney World. There is a cut-down version of that version that plays with the Celebrate a Street Party out at Disneyland. And I believe the final one I have is a country version. That is what I have been able to find thus far of the Celebrate You theme songs. I mean, I have a few from commercials and such, but those have not been released in any way whatsoever. But as a huge audio collector, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play that version in its entirety at the end of this segment. And then you can compare it to your Corbin Blue version. And in another interesting note, if all of you go to the What Will You Celebrate official website, they're actually allowing you to download for free the country version now. So make sure you go over to the official site. I'll have the actual link to that in the show notes for this week's show under the T-Mail segment on the forums. So go into the forums, go into show notes, go to the show notes for this episode, and right down in there you'll find that link where you can download the country version as well. But I'll play the parade version for you at the end of the segment in its entirety without me talking over it like I do at the beginning of every episode. So there you go, Andy. Our final email is from Justin. I'm going to get this wrong. It's either Weiss or Weiss. Whatever it is, Justin, I apologize. I'm going to now read your email. I've been listening to your podcast for a long time now, and I can't say enough good things about it. In fact, I find it to be the only Disney podcast I can really trust. Well, I think you could trust more than just us. There's plenty of good other podcasters out there. You've got our good friends Ricky Briganti, Paul Barry, and so many others out there to go listen to. Go give them a try. I guarantee you'll trust them too. Unfortunately, I got a new computer, and when I switched my iPod to it, it deleted all of my earlier podcasts. Now I had to resubscribe to it, and I forgot on which podcast you played the whole Celebrate You song, and I can't seem to find it. Just wonder if you could tell me which podcast it is on. Justin, to tell you the truth, I looked through them today, and I could not find the episode. I know we did play it late last year at some point. I couldn't find it in the episode for some reason. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play two versions of Celebrate You to end this segment this week. We're going to play the parade version that Andy has asked for, and then I will play the Corbin Blue version, which is the original, which I believe is the one you're talking about. If not, email us back here again, and I'll play the other one at some point in the future. But all right, so that's going to wrap up WDWN T-Mail for this week. We're now going to end the segment with the two requested pieces of audio, and then we'll end this week's show.
Since 1971, people from all over the world have gathered in this magic kingdom to celebrate some of life's most precious moments and occasions. We invite you now to continue this tradition in the place where dreams come true as we celebrate you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like that is going to do it for episode number 96 of the WDW News Today podcast. As always, I want to thank you for listening. You make the show possible and worth doing each and every week. I'd also like to apologize for how late the show was. It was just a very crazy weekend here at WDWNT as we are setting up so much for our two-year anniversary celebration, officially kicking off on June 8th, and so many amazing projects coming up for us that time just slipped by and a few podcasts came out late, but the show got there. Nonetheless, I hope you enjoyed it, and I thank you for sticking with us and listening once again to the show. It's now time for the big finish, giving you all the useful reminders you'll need to know in the coming week. First of all, to contact us here at the show with any questions, suggestions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at wdwnewstoday@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail message at 206-666-2982. Be sure to review us on iTunes if you have not already. It's a great way to let others know that there is an enjoyable Walt Disney World-based podcast out there for them. Be sure to visit the WDWNT community forums to vote for upcoming segments of the show, and as well to view the show notes for this and previous episodes. That's right, I've actually been doing the show notes each and every week, and they're on there at the forums, so go check them out. Be sure to follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/WDWNT, and also make me a friend on Facebook. While over there on Facebook, be sure to join the WDWNT Network Facebook group, a great way to keep in touch with everything going on at the network. Speaking of things going on around the network, we're proud to announce WDWNT Network Fan Meet number 4, O Illuminations, taking place on June 27th at Epcot. If you're going to be at the Walt Disney World Resort, be sure to join us for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. All the details are on WDWNewsToday.com, the WDWNT Network Community Forums, and as well on Facebook. Coming up on next week's show, episode number 97, We're going to have your Walt Disney World Resort news and rumor report. We're going to have the final edition ever of What Were They Thinking? And another great edition of Town Square Talk, where you'll be the first to hear about all the exciting stuff in store for our two-year anniversary just in a few weeks. With that, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to just about do it, which now means it's once again time for the corniest catchphrase in all of podcasting. That's going to do it for this week. See you all next week. See ya real soon.
Thanks for taking part in another episode of the WDW News Today podcast and celebrating news today. Please join us again next week. And remember to celebrate news today and every day throughout the WDWNT network by visiting WDWNT.com. This is Brian Summer saying good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.